That's me on the podcast, sharing a song with something to say about it. With Thin Lear and Niagara Moon, losing my opinion.
Hey, how you doing, Thin Lear?
I'm doing all right. A little fried, just a little lightly toasted.
Same here.
But not in a fun way.
It's too hot.
It is.
You're glistening today, too. I don't know if you put any sunscreen on.
No sunscreen. It's just this is all natural.
The natural glaze. Sorry, you were saying something?
No. Is that your opening? How wet I look?
I had something I've been sitting on a little bit.
Okay.
It's been a little while now, but we talked about shoegaze.
We did.
We enjoy shoegaze.
Yeah.
I played a bit of My Bloody Valentine's To Hear Knows When to Hui Min to just yes. be like, oh yeah, this is like the kind of stuff we talked about this week. And she didn't hate it. You know, she has vitriol towards a lot of the music I happen to enjoy, but she was like, I don't know how I would listen to like more than a minute or two of this.
Okay. So you just drift off.
Right. It's not a cohesive song. There aren't lyrics that you can really pick out. And I was like, oh, it's interesting for me. I could listen to it a lot. Like every time I put it on, it sounds different. And it's like, that kind of music, that ambient washy music, is a great springboard for me to just kind of like, for lack of a better term, just like kind of play movies in my mind.
Sure.
Like it'll inspire me to kind of like see things in my mind's eye, like just worlds and shapes.
Oh, wow.
Like
there's Kevin Shields with a bunch of guitars around him and 10 pedals. He's stepping on them.
It's a fun, brainy experience. I'm not going to go so far as to say I have synesthesia, but like music like that and a lot of electronic music, like music that's focused on texture, it just like puts me in fun little mind rooms. And she could not relate to this at all.
Mm.
Are you on my side more? Do you get what I'm talking about? Or
yeah, I can go in fun little mind rooms, which I feel like should be the title of your next record, Fun Little Mind Rooms.
All of my albums are Fun Little Mind Rooms.
Yeah. No, I hear where you're coming from.
You get them too.
I think when I was younger, I felt more comfortable letting myself kind of go nuts with cinematic experiences. Like it made up cinematic experiences while I was listening to music. Mm. Now I do it less. And I think that might be just the death of childhood.
Creativity and imagination. Yeah.
But I still do it. I just do it less because obviously I'm spending less time just sitting with headphones on than I used to when I was younger. But
it sounds like maybe yours might have been more narrative driven. I didn't. There wasn't any story.
Narrative driven. Yes.
There was no story going on. It was just imagery.
Just you wandering in those mind rooms. Mm-hmm. I actually did have a cinematic experience that was not in my own brain. I went to see Maxine. You know, we had a sitter and we stayed for, I would say, the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then we saw that the baby was crying on the monitor and we had to go home. But it happened where we were leaving. I don't want to do a spoiler for anyone who has not seen this movie, but there's an extremely disgusting, visceral scene that's very violent at the beginning of that movie. I thought it was hilarious. Like it was great. You know, like I was not upset by this, but it just so happened that my daughter started crying on the monitor that we were listening to when that happened. And I felt so ashamed that I had to stand up and leave at that moment because it looked as if I said, come on, honey, we're leaving.
This is too disturbing. We want to see some good, wholesome content.
That I was like, come on, Emily, we're getting out of here. This is not what I paid $20 for. You know, like I was just very... I was very embarrassed to leave.
You look like a couple of dorks.
I definitely felt like a dork. And I was like, no, like everyone, I love Jalo. Like, you know, this is perfect for me. I would totally sit through this. But yeah, I wanted to explain, but nobody wanted to hear that in the middle of this film.
Aww.
Speaking of things that no one wants to hear, should we introduce the...
Nobody wants us lingering on this intro. You're listening to a music podcast, folks.
In case you haven't noticed.
This is Losing My Opinion. I am Nicolas Cage performance applauding.
Oh, yeah.
Indie artist Niagara Moon, a.k.a. Thomas Irwin.
I'm not going to do anything different. I am also Nicolas Cage performance applauding.
He's awesome.
Indie musician Thin Lear, a.k.a. Matt Longo. He rises to the occasion of whatever movies he's in, I'll say.
Always.
So if it's a bad movie, though, he's going to meet it where it is.
He's great in Long Legs.
Want to see it.
Definitely can say that much.
I want to see the first 5 minutes of that. Can't wait.
It's a good first 5 minutes. I will say that. Yeah.
Excellent.
It'll get you. So we got two segments going on today. It's been a while since we heard from the mastermind Thin Layer himself. You got something you're bringing in for me?
Yeah, I guess, again, speaking of things that you don't want to hear, my segment today grew out of something you said during the Warren Zevon episode, an incredible artist that we'd yet to actually formally address, right? I was sort of surprised when he brought it up. I was like, oh, we did that stupid hockey song, but beyond that,
hit somebody,
we didn't do anything else. Well, I've got another one today, and now is as good a time as any to do this. We can maybe call this the Thin Layer is a Glutton for Punishment episode, because I'm going to wade into deep waters knowing that you will dislike what I'm bringing to the table.
Oh, no.
And yet, we'll proceed anyway. This guy is a hero of mine, as he is for so many songwriters. You know, we talk about people like Bowie, shedding their skin, making complete transformations from record to record in a theatrical way. Mm-hmm. Our artist today is also a chameleon, but his trajectory is one that you can map. It's a steady evolution. For me, he's one of the best recording artists I've ever heard. For you, I think he's someone that you respect, but he's not for you. And what I'd like to do is to introduce you to someone that I do not think you've met before. You have met, probably, Barfly, Bukowski indebted, Tom Waits. You've met that Tom Waits.
Sure.
You've met freaky carnival barker Tom Waits. You've met Springsteen pop anthem contemporary with a twist Tom Waits. But have you met balladeer Tom Waits? Sincere balladeer.
So you're talking about the early stuff?
Not necessarily.
No?
It's sprinkled throughout his career. And yeah, like he does that more in his first few records, but he always comes back to it. You know, it's part of his foundational makeup to write these kind of songs that have like a Cole Porter vibe sometimes, where it's like, you know, they almost feel like he could write them and give them to Frank Sinatra, but there's like a little bit of an edge to all of them because of the way he delivers them.
So you're telling me Tom Waits is like a great American songbook?
Yes, yes, that is exactly.
It's not all "Tonight We're Bound for Singapore."
It's not all that stuff, which I love. I'll take that all day. I'll take all that.
Okay.
But yes, there's also a great American songbook element to him, and I want to skip around a little bit in his career trajectory because I do want to get rid of the misconception that this is just sort of stuck in his early career. So he has a 3-album collection called Orphans. I don't know if you've ever heard this.
I've not heard that.
It's split into 3 records. It's called Brawlers, Ballers, and Bastards. And it's really like a great way of splitting up the different sides of his songwriting. For me, it came out in 2006, one of the best albums of the 2000s, if you can call it an album and not a collection. So there's Brawlers, which is like the tougher, crazier songs, Bastards, which is like the really nutty songs, and then Ballers is the ballads. This song that I'm sharing here is called You Can Never Hold Back Spring. Have you ever heard this song?
No, I've heard very little of Tom Waits in general. I tried to get into Rain Dogs, Once Upon a Time. What are some other big albums from that era?
Swordfish
Trombones. Yeah. I'm like, these marimbas are cool, but this isn't coming together for me. Like, it's just not clicking. The mind movies are not very entertaining to me.
Right.
Just clearly there's a unique artistry here, but it's not for me. I don't care for the sound of his voice, even when he is more sincerely trying to hit notes. Going Out West is kind of cool. That's kind of a cool groove. He doesn't usually like bother me, and sometimes I can sort of start to get into what he's got going on, but I just long ago I kind of crossed him off the list. I'm like, don't think I'm going to be a fan of this guy. So anything more obscure, anything outside of like the classic era, even his earlier stuff before he got more unconventional, those are all blind spots for me, I would say.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, we might then be starting with a song that you will like the least, but you know, he's in his full growl at this point, but he's not like, he's not using it in that guttural way. I mean, he's just singing and that's his voice. But I mean, I guess the point of today is, because I know it's probably his voice that is the thing that drives you away the most, like, listen to it as if other artists could be recording it. because that's what was happening early in his career. He would write songs like Martha and Rosie, and like, we'll listen to some of these other songs. Please Call Me Baby, you know, where other artists are taking them and then turning them into songs that are more palatable for a general public. But these are all tunes, especially this one that we're about to hear. I feel like this could be an American standard. Like, when I heard it the first time, I was like, it's that great thing where it feels like you've heard it a million times, but it's also fresh. That's what I hear when I listen to some of these songs.
Okay. So I have to exercise some imagination here.
Think, just hear the song in and of itself.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm getting late period Dylan vibes.
You might feel that way. And there are songs that
Love and Theft all over again here.
This is, I don't know. I feel like this is more accessible music than that, but.
Better be.
I don't know. We'll see.
You Can Never Hold Back Spring. That's a great title. That sounds like that'd be a classic American song.
And it's very sentimental. You know, the lyrics, he's not going left of center. It's just, okay. You know, it sounds alternative because it's him, but it's not an alternative tune.
All right. So you're big into this one. I'll give it my best shot here. So this is from 2006, Orphans, Brawlers and Ballers.
You can never hold back spring. You can be sure I will never stop believing. The blushing rose, it will climb.
It's a real Louis Armstrong thing here.
Yes. Yeah.
Does he do Wonderful World?
Dreams the same dream every time. Baby, you can never hold back spring. And even though you've lost your way, the world is dreaming. Dreaming of spring. So close your eyes, open your heart to the one who's dreaming of you. And you.
Okay. Yeah, it's got some jazz standard energy. I see where you're coming from.
Absolutely. Check out. So now the next one we're going to listen to is off his debut album, Closing Time. It is from 1973. This is really, he was kind of writing in this mode, the mode that we just heard, pretty exclusively at this point. Like, you hear him at this stage in his career finding his own way within the world of the Warren Zevons and Jackson Browns and Eagles, you know, playing at the Troubadour, right? Like, he's in that scene. He's in that world.
1973. So that was when he put out his first album. That's as early as it gets.
Yeah, that's his first record.
So is it that he started out in the zone of the song that we just heard and then went away from that and did kind of the weird stuff, the pop adjacent stuff, the experimental stuff, and then he kind of came to that again later in his career? Is that kind of the arc?
Yeah. And you can kind of map where he is at any point in time with these records. Like, it's not like a Bowie thing where he is jumping around constantly. Like, he starts in this mode, and then very slowly this other person starts to creep in. You know, he's influenced by Bukowski and, you know, sort of that the piano has been drinking, you know, like that kind of vibe. And he starts to go in that direction, and he starts to get funny and he starts to get weird. And then the instrumentation follows along. You know, he meets his partner, Kathleen Brennan. And then, like, things really start to get even more colorful and interesting from there. But he doesn't ever fully go back to where he was at Closing Time, where he's like, you know, sort of a hard luck version of Jackson Browne, or, you know, really he's very much akin to Warren Zevon at this point in his career. And I think you'll hear it. But yeah, this song is called Martha. It was covered by Tim Buckley to great effect, the father of Jeff. A lot of people were covering him at this point. It was sort of like, you know, like early Bruce Springsteen or whatever, where like there were other bigger artists that found him before anybody else did.
He had that musician's musician brand to him, the songwriter.
Yeah, I think people saw his potential, saw the potential of this music. And there's like the Barfly vibe is in this work.
He was an alcoholic around this time, right?
I think, you know,
that monkey was still on his back.
Hearing his interviews, they were talking about it. Like, I think he thought that it was just part of the game, like part of the art, is that he needed to kind of mirror the
abuse himself,
the image that he was trying to convey, or, you know, the music that he was enamored with, that it came with this everything else, you know.
I am looking forward to hearing this. I if you showed me You Can Never Hold Back, blah, 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 You Can Never Hold Back Spring, if you played a performance of that song by a vocalist that I normally really like, yeah, I think I'd be fully on board. It wasn't sappy. It didn't have like an overly kind of sentimental, like too sentimental, kind of sickly sweet quality that I've heard some of Bob Dylan's more recent ballads have. Like, it didn't have any... I don't quite care for the timbre of his voice, but otherwise, I could see what you enjoyed in that song. And you're saying, Martha, this is like even better. This is one of the classic go-tos, or
it's also in that vein. I think this is one of the classic tunes from that period of his career. You know, this one, I was kind of going back and forth between this one, the song called Rosie. That's also in there, but the chorus on this song is just fantastic. It's achingly beautiful. The lyrics and chord changes, like, if he wanted to have a whole career just doing this, 100% he could have done that.
He could have just stuck to this sound.
He might have had even more success, honestly.
He looks like he's 46 on the cover. I'm trying to remind myself he was actually half that age.
Doesn't he look like Ron Perlman?
Yes, he most
like
certainly
if they're
does.
Doing a biopic, they should DH Ron Perlman.
DH Ron Perlman. Honestly, Tom Waits could play himself. Like, when I like him as an actor. I don't think we've mentioned that, at least for this episode. He shows up in like a Terry Gilliam movie or Jim Jarmusch. Like,
he's always great.
I'm down. I'm captivated. Yeah. He's cool. His screen presence is
something. Yeah, Renfield, right? He's just great.
Oh, I haven't seen Renfield yet.
Oh, no. Sure. Dracula. Francis Ford Coppola is Dracula.
Oh, he's in that?
And he plays Renfield, yes. And he is
wild.
Great. Like, him and Gary Oldman are just, like, completely batshit in that film.
Does he try to do a British accent along with Keanu?
He has an accent. He's kind of just, like, sputtering and stuff, so it's hard to tell what he's doing, but it's fantastic. He blows everyone away that is not Gary Oldman.
Sounds like I got to put that on the list.
Yeah.
All right, without any further delay here, though, let's check out apparently a Tom Waits classic from the album Closing Time. Martha.
Operator, number please. It's been so many years. She remembered my old voice while I fight the tears. Hello, hello, there is this Martha, this is old Tom Frost, and I am calling long distance. Don't worry about the cost, 'cause it's been 40 years or more now. Martha, please recall, meet me out for coffee, where we'll talk about it all. And those were days of roses, oh, a dream frozen, Martha. All I had was you, and all you had was me. There was no tomorrows. We packed away our sorrows and we saved them for.
I'm picking up on the, you know, like the Cole Porter thing a little bit here. Mm. There's a through line.
And I feel so much older now. You're much older.
It's hard to hear Rain Dogs in this.
Yeah, it's a totally different person. Does Rod Stewart butcher this song like 30, 40 years later on one of his standards albums?
You know, he might. He really might. I don't know, but it seems like a song that he would do. What are your feelings on that one?
I think I like the one before a little bit more. His voice is different. I mean, it's still his cadence. I'm not sure if that's getting in the way for me. Maybe it's just a little... He's in full sad sack mode here, right?
I mean, these are all ballads. I mean, he's not.
Yeah.
The balladeers typically are not happy in their delivery.
It felt a little too, you know, I'm listening for those melodic turns of phrase, those chords. It felt a little slight or a little drab in the melodic content department for me, as his music maybe often does, and too much words, narrative, you know, the stuff that I think Thin Lear especially responds to. Is it, we might be entering into a Jim, what was his name? Jim Prine?
John Prine.
John Prine.
One of the greatest songwriters of all time.
John Prine. Yes, it's like, I get it. There's something a little too slow, a little too dragging along for me. The energy level is a little low for what I'm looking for in a folk song. If we're going to throw folk genre label on him, maybe in this period. I don't know what else you'd call it, but
right.
It's I don't know. Yeah, it's not quite falling into my personal musical Venn diagram, but you put this on, it's like, it's perfectly respectable. It's not rubbing me the wrong way at all, which maybe is, we've been here before. I don't know if this is too frustrating or boring perspective.
No, this is why I don't bring in music I like to the show, but. We're going to keep going anyway. This is another song that I think is probably in the same vein as the last one. It's a little more polished, though.
All right.
This is from his second record. This is released in 1974, so he was just kind of doing his thing at this point. I think I wouldn't say obscurity, but he's not really breaking through with this sound just yet.
Oh, he was struggling until, what was the breakthrough, like Rain Dogs, like
probably
the 80s?
Even a little before that. But okay. Yeah, I mean, he had some hits through other people.
What's the one, Saturday Night Something Something?
That's actually this album. Yeah, we're gonna hear it. It's just a more polished version of what we were just listening to. I mean, he's kind of taking that to the next level, and I think maybe not having the success commercially that I don't know that was eluding him. Maybe that pushed him in other directions, or maybe he just was following the muse. I have no idea. But yeah.
Well, this cover is very familiar. This is a cool illustration here. The heart of Saturday Night. This used to be on the wall at the venue I worked at in Japan, Negapoji. I remember seeing this cover all the time.
Oh, all right.
The heart of Saturday Night. The song is called Please Call Me Baby.
Mm-hmm.
So what year is this? We're talking like 74.
Yeah. This is where he's like sort of just perfecting that sound. You hear this sounds like there's more money behind this album. I think he reaches the apex of what he's trying to do with that sound before he takes a big left turn.
Please call me baby. I am still curious. This is, I haven't heard anything that's really turned me off so far.
Great.
So I'll give this my best shot.
In the win column then.
I like the jazzy influence here. I like those strings.
Well, the evening fell just like a star, left a trail behind. You spit as you slammed out the door. If this is love, we're crazies. We fight like cats and dogs. But I just know there's got to be more. Streets.
I'd like to hear Rufus Wainwright sing this.
Oh, he might have covered it.
Catching your death of cold out walking in the rain. I admit that I ain't no angel. I admit that I ain't no saint. I'm selfish and I'm cruel, but you're blind. If I exercise my devils, well, my angels may leave.
I'm seeing it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's like, when I hear that, I'm sure you're hearing something completely different. But when I hear that song, I'm like, this is a classic song. You know, this is the kind of songwriting that I aspire to. I'm not hearing anything other than American Standard. And I don't know that people, I think some people feel that way about his songwriting. I know his fans would look at that song and probably say, like, yeah, that's a classic tune of his, but like, there's just no part of that doesn't feel classic to me. The verse, the orchestration, the chorus, the delivery, you know, it's up there. And I think other songwriters were like, yes. And you brought up Rufus Wainwright, and that's a great thought, because Rufus and others like him really revived a lot of that kind of music that was maybe a little left of center and brought it, made it, you know, more beautiful and palatable, I think. Even though Rufus does have his own left of center streak, he has the ability to kind of just deliver a straight ahead tune in a beautiful way. So, yeah.
I think my main hang up at this point, and why I'm not getting to the level of enthusiasm that you are and sharing that, I think it's like I hear a song like that, and it's certainly very accomplished, and there's a lot of talent going on, but I hear Tom Waits channeling the music that he loves, which I'm sure a lot of that is American Standards, and I know I heard one of his favorite albums is, what's the solo Thelonious Monk album where the cover is like him flying in a like an old timey plane.
I know what you're talking about.
Solo Monk, something like that. Like that. He loves jazz. He loves the classics, the songbook, the standards. I hear that, and I hear him like channeling and emulating that kind of music. I don't hear him putting like a new flavor into it, really. Like, he's the one delivering it, but I don't really hear what he happens to be like adding to it. So it's like, it's doing these things well. You're great, certainly orchestration, but I feel like I can get a better version of this with other more classic artists. That seems to be what the wall I'm hitting at this point.
There was somebody else that you said that about too.
Probably.
I can't remember who it was. It was like early on. It was like Dr. John or somebody like that. I don't want to hear this. I'd rather hear Alan Toussaint or something, even though I don't listen to him at all.
You got a good memory of that.
But I like Alan Toussaint, I will say. I really do like him.
Sure.
But, all right. So we'll try one more. This one you probably will like the least. This is called...
Saving the best for last.
In my brain, Christmas Card from a Hooker in Minneapolis.
I do like that title. That's the title of
this song. This is not just one of my favorite Tom Waits songs. This is one of my favorite songs of all time. Probably some of my favorite lyrics out of any pop song, like top 20 or 30 best lyrics. It's off a record called Blue Valentine that was released in 78. And this is when he was like mid-period in his career, where he's kind of bouncing back and forth between, never straight ahead balladry anymore, but like dipping his toe into more alternative stuff, rockier sounds, but also has that foundation of like standard songwriter. Nate's a person you could talk to about this too, because we were like, I heard this music when I was just exclusively listening to his albums for like a 2 or 3 month span. Nate and I were doing that. And you have to listen to this whole song to understand its power. So we're not going to get it here, but...
We're not going to do it justice.
No, the gist of it is there's an incredibly unreliable narrator in this song who is delivering this heart-wrenching monologue, and I'm going to give it away up front because I think we just have to.
Shit.
Narrator's delivering this heart-wrenching monologue about how they're in a better place now know, they're talking to somebody that they used to have a wild past with. And they're just, it's presented like they're just wanting to connect and reminisce. But then at the very end of the song, just before closing, they're basically like, yeah, well, actually, I was lying about all that. And I need money for bail. And it's like this second level of heartbreaking, because you realize everything that came before was just kind of, yes, it was a lie, but it's also their dream scenario. Like they wish they were telling this person this, and then they're just like, but fuck, I really do need to get out of jail. And they are like, you know, they're begging this person that they used to know that they probably would not have reached out to if they really didn't need to. So it's like a little bit funny, but it's also just heartbreaking and very surprising. I think the first time you hear it, because you just think it's a different tune. But yeah, let's listen. And I really, really love the instrumentation. It's just kind of sparse, but yeah.
It's interesting. He's mixing acoustic piano and like 80s synthetic piano. A
little plinky thing, yeah.
Haven't heard that before.
Charlie, I'm pregnant, living on 9th Street, right above a dirty bookstore off Euclid Avenue. I stopped taking dope and I quit drinking whiskey. My old man plays the trombone and works out at track. He says that he loves me, even though it's not his baby. He says that he raised him up like he was on son. He gave me a ring that was worn by his mother. It takes me out dancing every Saturday night. Hey, Charlie, I think about you every time I pass the filling station. The counter all the green.
It does feel antagonistic to be cutting that short, but in the spirit of the format of the show.
Yeah,
I mean, he certainly does spin yarns. Nobody's ever doubted that.
Yeah.
Is that your favorite of the four today? We've gone.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, You Can Never Hold Back Spring. It's just that song. It's just a fucking classic tune. But this one,
I think that was my favorite.
That was your favorite one, which is funny because that's the latest one. That's when he's like deepest in his, doing his guttural thing. But you might like that Orphans record. That is an incredible collection of music. I mean, it's just like 15 tracks on each one. And he just released it all at once. It's just like, it's this treasure trove that any artist would kill to have this back catalog. And he just blasted it out in one year. He's just like, here's like 45 fucking songs in three different categories. And yeah. There's really nobody like him. And I'm glad we talked about him. I sort of understood this was going to be what we were going to deal with today. But don't worry. Next week, I'm going to bring in my top 10 favorite fart noises or whatever. Yay. It is I can come up with that is not music I like.
I hope I didn't rain on your parade. I do want to encourage you to bring artists on here that you're enthusiastic about, that you have passion for. You don't care too much what I think, really, do you?
No, it just makes for a real slog of a time. So it is not entertaining at all, I don't think. So,
hey, I appreciate getting to be exposed to this kind of stuff.
All right, yeah.
I don't want to say never again. But
we'll see when I can think of a good time for the next Music I Like episode. But folks, you're just going to be hearing fart noises from me for a little bit longer,
oh,
I think.
Oh, boy.
Well, anyway, what have you been listening to this week?
losing my opinion.
What have I been listening to?
Is it something I'm going to have to pretend to enjoy? Or
no, well, it's an artist that I think we both would be ready to say we're fans of.
Okay.
I think we think good things when we hear this artist's name. It's definitely a lot of songs of theirs that we both really like. I think we're going to align on the topic for this week. But as I kept digging, I a lot of questions were popping up, a lot of theories, some disappointment. I think this is going to end up being a revisionist history episode. What could have been, using our imaginations a little bit. But the artist I'm talking about today is Donovan.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, I really like Donovan. I mean, he's somebody who definitely has two different styles. And he was like, I think you could accuse him of doing a like Satanic Majesty's Request thing and being like, now I'm psychedelic. but he did it so ridiculously well and like better than almost everyone else.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I'd rather listen to him approximating Paul McCartney's psychedelic vibe than anyone else. And, you know, approximating Dylan's folky vibe than anyone else. Like, he's just right there with the artists that are influencing him. Like, that's how good he is.
Oh, yeah. He's up there with the best of them for 60s artists, for sure. He absolutely held his own. You start looking at that list of hits. What songs do you like from Donovan when you think of, you know, certain albums?
He would have, like, the greatest fucking greatest hits record. You know what I mean? Because I don't know if there's any one album from him that I'm like, I love this start to finish. I've tried to listen all the way through before and like, you know, there's a smattering of songs that are absolutely brilliant and then others that I don't gravitate towards. But like, you know, Barabajaggle, that song is incredible. Atlantis, I love.
Atlantis.
Hell, Atlantis. You know, I love that. Hurdy-Gurdy Man, we've talked about before. I think that's Hurdy-Gurdy one of Man, the best songs of the 60s.
Absolutely.
Just heavy as shit. You know, there's Catch the Wind, you know, like songs like that where it's like, oh, this
early on, yeah.
They're talking about standards, like that song.
Yeah.
You know, it's a classic folk song. There's probably like 15 songs of his that I truly
easy.
Love. Yeah.
Sunshine Superman.
Oh, 100%. I mean, yeah.
It's so, that one is so of its time, but like in the best way. It's all those 60s cliches and everybody's hustling just to have a little scene. Like it's dripping with 60s-ness, but it's just above it all too. Like it transcends. It's a great, solid, fun pop number. And then you go from there, fucking Colors is a beautiful
song. Oh, it's a great song. That's another one like Catch the Wind where it's like, this is a standard. This is a classic.
They call me Mellow Yellow.
Another classic.
Quite rightly.
And you're right. It's like, you know, you listen to, and I don't want to shit on Strawberry Alarm Clock, but like you listen to Incense Peppermints, right? And it's and you know, it's of its time to a point where you could say, well, it might almost be stuck there.
It is,
but yeah, Sunshine Superman. There's just, I think it's his melodies.
It's got more pizzazz to it. Yeah,
his melodies are so interesting that it's still, you know, it rises out of the out of that era. And I still love the instrumentation because it's still a bit weird. You know, he was like linking up with Jimmy Page at that point.
Something left of center about all those hits still. There's something bristling. It's crackling with energy. He's got a really great, weird vocal delivery. Absolutely. He totally established himself in the 60s as one of the great psychedelic artists, one of the great pop artists. We have not named any songs outside of the 60s.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, I don't really know. I don't know what he did. I know that he has a record called Cosmic Wheels that people say is really, really good, but I've never listened to it. I can't get past, like, probably Barabajaggle might be the last record of his that I, like, know songs off of.
All right. Well, we're going to start to get into it then. The original idea for today, I wanted it to be a celebration, and it still can mostly be that. We're Donovan fans. We're pro-Donovan. If you haven't checked out even the album Hurdy-Gurdy Man, songs like Get Thy Bearings, Juniper, like there's stuff to dig into. The album I really wanted to put front and center and get everybody hyped about, the underrated one And I think it's like when you came in talking about Muswell Hillbillies. It's like, we love the Kinks, but they have this particular album people are kind of sleeping on. I'm doing that with Donovan. There's a Donovan album that is my favorite, and I think it's solid all the way through. It's everything I love about him. It's got at least two songs that are like hit material. Not enough people know about it. The album Open Road.
Never heard of it.
So it's great. And we're going to get into it. I'm going to play a couple songs from it. You're going to love it. You're going to want to check out the whole album when we're done. And then I was like, okay, that's from 1970. He's got a ton of albums in the 70s throughout the whole rest of the decade. One of them is Cosmic Wheels, tons of others. I spent an afternoon going through them. My thumb got tired from all the skipping I had to do. It was so disappointing. It was such a letdown, that whole stretch of his discography.
You feel like he really lost his mojo after that.
Oh my God. Point. So I want to do a couple different things today. I want to sell you on Open Road. That album is fucking great.
Sure.
And then I kind of want to mourn what happened after that. My thesis, my argument, I got a big one, big statement today that I got to try to back up here. I don't know of any other great artist of his generation that fumbled the ball in the 70s as badly as he did. I can't think of a single other artist. You know, there's people who had, you know, too many problems with drugs or, right, you know, mental illness, they died. You got plenty of those artists, but the ones who like stayed healthy, stayed prolific, stayed active and sharp, who just couldn't get those 70s hits at all. Like I feel like he is the most jarring example of that. I can't think of anybody else.
Well, check it out. I mean, I really don't. I'm unaware of his output in that stage. I mean, one thing I'll say is, like, I always felt like he could have been like a Mark Bolan type character, because, you know, I listened to T-Rex and we listened to some of their stuff, and yeah, like, you know, T-Rex started off as like, you know, what's the name of that band? Incredible String Band style, like deep British folk music. Like, weird, they started off like
psychedelic
that,
folk,
which, yeah, is not too far from where Donovan was at the end of the 60s. And then, yeah, got into this like stompy, groovy, electric guitar heavy stuff. And like, Donovan has shown that he can do that. Like, obviously, absolutely, paired with Jimmy Page, but he can write songs that can accommodate that sound. Like,
again and again, yeah.
He could have gone into a glam direction, but I don't know, maybe he did. I don't know. I always felt like he was right, a different version of Mark Bolan.
I'm going to start laying the groundwork here. I have a theory on what might have helped him cement his legacy in the 70s, have some more hits. He was not, forget critically successful, he was not commercially successful for years and years and years and years and years. And he did, he kept releasing, but it just, as far as I could make out, with all the stuff I was able to hear 30 seconds, 60 seconds, and then skip through, now things never clicked again. I have a theory as to what could have been different, but I want to go back to the positives for a little bit here as we play the first song. Again, Open Road, fucking great album, start to finish, best Donovan album for my money.
Wow.
Really exciting sound. I want to play you probably the biggest tune from that album, called Ricky Ticky Tavi.
I actually do know this song.
Where do you know it from?
I didn't think I knew any. I just know it. I know the song. I like the song, but I don't. I think they played it like when I was in elementary school and we were reading the accompanying poem. I don't know what it is, but yeah.
Ricky Ticky Tavi is a character from the Jungle Book. Donovan's going off on some whole other message that I think is pretty fun and cool in the song. But we're starting the 70s out great here. This released in the first half of 1970. Again, the band he's playing with is great. The album is solid. I'll share my enthusiasm here with this tune, Ricky Ticky Tavi.
Okay. Used to great effect in Barbarian.
Yeah, Justin Long.
My love, Ricky Ticky Ticky, Mongoose is
I mean, this is just a whim.
Oh yeah, no, it's a great song.
Uniquely him, but it's solidly written. It's got a great beat.
When I was a young man, I was led to believe there were organizations to kill my snakes for me, i.e. the church, i.e. the government, i.e. school. But when I got a little older, I learned how to kill myself. I said,
yeah, just super simple songwriting with an incredible arrangement and a great melody.
And it's fun. It's like, it's the Beatles thing where it feels like it could be a kid's song, but it's also, it's an all-timer for all audiences. Going off the rails, a little quirky, but like, it's awesome.
Anyone who says you need really like interesting out there chord changes to have an interesting song is absolutely wrong. They're nope. So dead wrong. If you listen to that song, really straight ahead chord changes. I don't know what the form is, but it's super straightforward. And yet the concept that drives it is just wacky and great.
A lot of my favorite songs are two or three chords. you really don't need to overthink it sometimes. So just in the interest of time, I'm going to bustle along to another choice from this album. I don't think you know this one. This might be my favorite from the whole track list.
Yeah, that's probably the only song I know from this.
So you're going to really dig this one. It's called Clara Clairvoyant.
He loves his alliteration.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, there's a lot of beautiful songs to pick from. Joe Bean's theme, Celtic rock is really cool and unique. But Clara Clairvoyant, that would be the other single for my money.
Elemental in every way, and it's excellent. It sounds like the whole thing was, I mean, if all the tracks on the record are of this vibe, like they just got together in a studio and knocked it out.
Yeah. It's fresh. It is, yeah, it's driven by just the feel of a tight band playing together. I would say he's shedding like the hippy-dippy shtick here. He's not just, you know, rehashing ideas or things he's done, you know, the past 5-6 years. So here's what happened. He had formed a new band to go along with this album, Open Road. Mike Thompson on guitar, bass, and vocals, and then John Carr on drums and vocals. So you got this tight trio. They're starting strong. You got an album like this. Because before that, Donovan had either just played solo or just used like session musicians, like a rotating cast. But they didn't stick together. And then Donovan was getting into like the film industry a little bit for a while, and he chilled out on the touring. He came back a couple years later in 1973 with the album you mentioned earlier, Cosmic Wheels, but you don't get the Open Road flavor at all. It's kind of like Donovan trying to just get back to what worked before, and he had a couple other weird projects in that time too, but this is like the sort of return to form moment, supposedly, and it's... I guess I could see why diehard Donovan fans might dig into it, because it's well-worn territory for him. He's rehashing a lot of the things he'd done in the past, but it's like early 70s production. But nothing in it worked for me. Just it was at best it was like competent and mediocre and boring, and then in other places it just felt totally out of touch with what was going on in music and the culture by then. It was a big old disappoint, and still like the most success he would have for the rest of the decade. We'll listen to a tune from Cosmic Wheels.
Yeah, because I still feel like I need to check it out just because it gets such good press in hindsight.
I'll play you one here that I think this one represents the album pretty well.
Did you choose one you didn't like or one that was...
I didn't like any of the album. I'm choosing one that I think isn't one of the worst ones that also just reflects the album as a whole. There weren't any winners. You know, hopefully we've established it on the podcast by this point. I love digging around in the forgotten B-side, weird, unlucky streak albums. Like, oh, maybe there's a couple tunes in here that are actually secretly jams. I love to do that with an artist who they lose their success, but people still say, oh, this might be worth it, or check this or that out. I love digging through to find some gems in the rough. Could not do that. It was a very very disappointing pursuit this week. But this one is called Wild Witch Lady. You know, this guy previously had Season of the Witch. It's competent. It's Donovan. Okay. He's back with his old producer, Mickey Most. But I'll see what you think here.
And I'm reading it. This record is very much like his T-Rex kind of hearkening to that sound. So I was a fool what I said earlier. Like, he did explore this. So maybe this is what I'm talking about.
He didn't get into glam. He got into other trends going on later, and we'll get to that. But he didn't go glam. He didn't hook up with Tony Visconti. He probably should have. We got this. Cosmic Wheels is the album, 1973. This is prime Nixon rock era. So great artists from the 60s should still be making some of their best stuff around this time. That's usually the trend. But here's what we got with Wild Witch Lady. Strings are kind of T-Rexy, but yeah, what the fuck is he doing? Like, what is this? Is this anything special?
I think he's just trying to get in on that sound, maybe.
He had a good thing going already. Why do we need to?
Definitely don't like it as much as what I was hearing on that last record.
And again, this is one of the strongest moments you have left for the rest of the decade with him. I don't know what happened. Again, he should have stuck with the Open Road Band. He needed like regular collaborators. I think he went back to the constantly switching around and, oh, maybe I'll try this sound out for this record now. Like it turned on him.
Sometimes I think artists need their contemporaries. You know, I'm not even going to say what I was going to say, but like sometimes artists need their contemporaries. They need that foil, right?
Okay.
And even though he was being, you know, he obviously wasn't scaling the heights of the Beatles or whatever, like he was able to kind of bounce off of what Paul McCartney was doing and turn it into something that was great on its own terms, but also heavily influenced by it. Same when he was in his Dylan period. And that's sort of what I brought up at the beginning here, where it's like, you know, you could accuse him of kind of following where things were going, but he always did it in his own way. And maybe what was going on at that time just didn't suit him. You know, he needed to reflect back something that was a different style. It just,
he couldn't just continue what he had going in 1970.
Well, you look at the Stones, right? Like the with their Satanic Majesty's Request. Like, I really like that album, but a lot of people don't, and it's very obviously a rip of Sgt. Pepper. But they were able to, once the Beatles died off, do their own thing. But you know, it could have not happened that way. Like, maybe they lose the foil and they lose themselves. And it sounds like some of that happened here in the vacuum of, the 60s.
It's a shame. All right, so that's Cosmic Wheels. That same year, he released a concert album from Japan. He released another album that was a little more, people say, introspective, kind of folk-oriented, called Essence to Essence.
Good title.
That was the closest I got to enjoying it, like the way I enjoyed Open Road. Like that had brief glimmers of hope, but still, like, none of the songs drove it home. There just wasn't. He kept either not bringing like interesting new ideas, or he started to sound like a parody of himself. Like, a lot of these songs started sounding like the Fred Armisen Portlandia version of a Donovan song.
I was going to say, there
song.
Were elements of like a Flight of the Conchords kind of thing. Yeah. And the last one we listened to, like, she'll suck you dry. You know, like that kind of thing where it's just like,
it's that. It feels like a spoof of itself. So then you get albums like Seven Teas in 1974. That's a nothing album. I'll tell you that right now. Slow Down World, 76. In 1977, he's opening for Yes.
Wacky.
He's opening for Yes during their 6-month tour of Going for the One. Like, that's what you're doing, dude? That's your pairing? 1978, he's really trying to lock it in. He releases an album that's just called Donovan.
Back to Basics.
Yeah, that's always a signal to your audience, like, no, listen to this one, like this one with my name, like this is where we're trying to lock it in. He should be embarrassed over the song International Man on that album. That's all I'm going to say. And there's weird tunes that just do not congeal, like California Kitties, and it's not good, bro. I'm going to wrap up the negativity soon, but it all comes to head with, like, we get to 1980, and he releases an album called Neutronica, and we get the synths involved.
Yes, I was going to guess, yeah.
He's trying to do new wave. He's trying to do synth pop, I guess. Bro, we're going to listen to a song from that called Me, I Love You. It is the best song on the album. It's the one that turned me off the least. It's co-written with his daughter, which is, you know, kind of cute. But it's still like, wow, he's rudderless. If this was his best foot forward, I'll see if this gets a reaction out of you. Neutronica from Donovan here. Me, I Love You is the song.
Yeah, because the Cosmic Wheels is just like, all right, you know, maybe it's the song that you played was not, I didn't love it. See what he's trying to do. This is different.
I got 30 other songs I could show you that would break your heart. This is, we're just skimming the surface of what I was dealing
with
this week.
This is pretty crazy to hear.
Oh yeah, Neutron. Fuck it, I'm going to play a little bit of Neutron from the same album. You see what I had to put up with here.
I mean, all these musicians kind of lost their minds in the 80s, but...
But this is 80, like, 84, sure. Like, you were supposed to have something left by 80 if you were so great in the 60s, like he was. And he was so young.
Yeah, he was really young.
I was born in the rubble of World War II, played ball where the tall buildings once grew. But today there's a way to make war pay, a new toy from the boys in the USA.
This isn't Roger Waters who listens to it.
The property stays, but the people have gone. Neutron.
You know, it's you hear he's still got that like sort of
he's got something
bouncy, playful melody thing that
he's
had
fucking and, trying.
Yeah, he's doing his thing. He's trying. That was tough. That was tough to hear that one.
He needed to keep a regular band. I think he needed more active collaborators. Like, God, even Paul McCartney, like he tried with Wings and he still had hits. There's still albums and moments that we love from the guy, even if we obviously pales in comparison to what he accomplished in the 60s. But my man Donovan,
yeah,
my heart breaks for him. Again, I could show you 30 more songs that just felt different degrees of embarrassing. And it's a shame because I love Open Road and I still want
to. I need to listen to that record. I didn't realize it was so good.
I know we're going a little long here. I intend to end things on a positive note, but
okay.
you had any other thoughts on...
No, it was just wacky to hear that.
This nadir in his career.
It's wacky to hear it. I mean, I knew he continued to make music in the 70s and 80s. I just didn't. I never investigated it. I don't know, I guess...
You can stop at Open Road. I'll save you the trouble right okay. there. I tried.
I want to listen to Cosmic Wheels all the way through, just because it has all the hype, but... Yeah, I didn't love the song that you played.
And again, I would say Essence to Essence over Cosmic Wheels, but you can knock yourself out with both. You know, do your own research. But it's a real shame. It's like the guy was super hardworking, super talented. It seems we're always going to just remember him from his very early output in the 60s. We just peg him as a 60s guy. It's a shame to think, you know, there could have been more here. He could have really... developed, at least in the first half of the 70s, the way a lot of his peers did who were at that level of quality. And it's, you know, it cut him out of the club. I don't know.
We still remembered pretty fondly, I think. Maybe not in the 90s or whatever, but like now I feel like there's enough interest in him where...
Yeah. Well, that's where I want to end things here. Because if you listen to this and you're a hardcore Donovan fan all the way through... If there's something you think I missed, like a hidden gem, I want to hear it. Like I'm not anti-Donovan. I tried the best I could. I still want to hear more from him that I'll enjoy. So I'm not shutting anybody out there. Yes, the culture kind of warmed up to him again. We got rid of this like, oh, hippies suck. It's all about punk and new wave now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I sent you this before. His collaboration with David Lynch in 2021. You know, he's gotten on in years now, but the guy still got it. And this song is way better than anything else I heard from the rest of the 70s. He's got a song called I Am the Shaman. He did this in David Lynch's studio like just a few years ago. David Lynch filmed the music video too. It's cool. And it's like, oh, this, you know, I might kind of be into the idea of seeing this guy live if he came my way. He's got something here still. I do want to end things with I Am the Shaman. See what you think of this.
Yon wheeling of great stars hath cast a silver web around my heart upon an elfin sea in a ship of filigree. And look upon her prow, a sign upon her brow. She guides us on our way when hearts they go astray. Lorelei, Lorelei, who will dry your pretty eyes? Lorelei, as you fly around those starry skies. Lorelei, why oh why oh Lorelei?
Yama, I am the Shama. Yama, I am the Shama. Yama, I am the Shama. I am Shaman.
that one.
It was cool. I mean, I think, yeah, maybe he should do, like, maybe he has already done this. I don't know. I'm talking out of my ass, but, like, an American Recordings style, like, Johnny Cash thing where he is just stripped down to his basics, because he is very obviously still a capable out there left of center folky. Like, maybe he needs to go all the way back.
Like, I didn't get into the, you know, the 80s, the 90s, 2000s. I could only cover so much ground. Maybe he already did that for himself and kind of found his footing again. And again, if you're a Donovan fan out there, you got suggestions, I will gladly hear him.
Oh, man, a true Donovan fan probably hated this. Listen.
If you're a true Donovan fan, you can't tell me that fucking, that 1978 album is fucking worth anything. God, it was disappointment after disappointment. It was a miserable few hours for me, Matt Longo.
Me. I love you.
Somebody had to do the work. But I am the shaman. So there you go. The guy was still capable of cool things later on in life. But yeah, that's what I had for today.
Yeah. Well, I got to listen to Open Road. That sounds like a really...
Open Road is fucking great.
Good record. I love Rikki Tikki Tavi. I thought that was an earlier song, to be honest. And then the other track you played for me was very good. And I like the idea of him in that realm for a full album. I'm always a fan of that ramshackle, sparse, did it in a week or two sound.
Great songs.
It's good.
Yeah, definitely check that out. And yeah, I just... Donovan, he could have ruled the 70s.
I think he needed the foil, you know?
Yeah.
Like when McCartney songwriting started, like, kicking up a notch again when him and Elvis Costello started doing their thing. Like,
Sure.
Sometimes you need that competition or whatever.
It tethers you.
Yeah.
Is that how podcasting works too? We ground the
Yeah,
other.
You need a foil. We need another podcast.
You need a heel.
Yeah, we need a...
Oh, God.
What is our...
Found my opinion.
Founding my opinion.
Didn't... What did we learn today?
I think I got to listen to Open Road. That was the most exciting thing I took away from that bit. I mean, it's just more depressing, you know, how quickly he lost his way in the 70s. I was thinking that he kind of had some songs I had, was really into through 75 at least, and was kind of... But yeah,
I mean, you can try Essence to Essence. It's still
70s was not kind to the psychedelic songwriter. I think you really had to go in another place or be able to strip it back.
Damn. Well, if I get a little more on in years, get a heavier heart, maybe I'll try The Heart of Saturday Night. Maybe I'll spin that up another time, or check out the Ballers album from 06.
That whole record is great. Orphans, I think. But if you don't like, I mean, Rain Dogs and like Swordfish Trombones, and if you don't like those records, I don't know.
Man, I don't know. I mean, there's any help for me.
Those records are. It'd be hard to argue that that's not his peak. That time period.
Well, you got anything going on that you want to tell people about?
No. Well, I just thank you for coming to the show. If you came to the show and you also listen. It was a lovely experience. The REP showcase at Berlin. I had a great time. I'm still fried from it, but it was awesome. And yeah, keep listening to A Beach Nightly Glory. It's there for you forever.
It is.
Until, you know, there's some sort of sun issue. It takes out the internet.
Oh, God. No, that EP is great stuff. And again, speaking of competition, listen to... my Niagara Moon albums right after. Tally up the points.
That's right.
Come to whatever conclusion you got.
Yeah, our survey is just slowly going to turn into that. And take our survey if you haven't taken it yet.
Yes, the Losing My Opinion survey. We're still going to include it in the show notes for this week. We're getting some more responses. Great stuff. Suggestions, you know, ideas you might have, or just even if you want to say hi, tell us about yourself. We want to know more about our audience, get to know you. You can also subscribe to Losing My Opinion, so you never miss a future episode. You can follow at Losing My Opinion on Instagram, TikTok, and
X.
And I love the guy. I'm a Donovan fan, but I don't think anybody else fumbled the 70s harder. And I could be wrong now. But I don't think so.
Cool. Very cool.
Very cool.
I think we were pretty hard on him today. But I think the reason you were being hard on him is because of just how great he was in the 60s. Like that, he was like up there with the best of them.
Yeah.
And I think it's the fall from that that really that irritated
it's the
you.
The fall from grace.
Yeah.
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 It's a damn shame. And, it wasn't like he was still selling. It tanked his career in that way for a while, too. You hate to see it.
On a brighter note, we should end by saying, you go listen to Open Road.
Fucking Open Road. Great, great, weird album.
I really do want to listen to. And you brought up Muswell Hillbillies, and it kind of does sort of remind me of that sound where it's like,
10 guys trying to ride a jalopy.
Right, exactly. It has that sound.
It's about to fall apart at any moment. To it. Yeah.
Yes.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, I'll say so long, suckers. Thank you for listening, as always. And we will see you next week.
Wait.